Fight or Flight, A South Side Story by Joseph Durrett. Narrated by Michael Kirby, Samantha Cooper, Marquise Moore, Samar Nanda, Eric Jenkins, Brian Wiggins, Rick Stedman, Fernando Contreras, Nick Messina, Eric Berger, Matt Weisgerber, Eric Aragoni, Hunter Gather, David A. Wood, Michael Reeves, Becky Parker, and Peter J. Boris. To see maps of the fictional world you are about to enter, visit josephdurrett.com. That's josephdurrett.com. Prologue.
Pow!
The red dart pierced the cherry center of the dartboard, a bullseye of bullseyes.
See that, Craig? That's Hollister's head.
Craig snuffed out a cigarette on the cement of a basement wall and reached for a can of beer.
You gotta stop talking like that, Curly. We got a truce with them, remember?
Curly hurled another dart that struck the target an inch to the right of the first one.
I don't care about no truce, and I don't care about no turf. All I care about is Hollister dead.
He lobbed a third red dart, but it bounced off the metal rim of the target before sticking in the worn brown carpet covering the basement floor. Craig snickered.
Nice shot.
Curly picked up another set of darts from a nearby table and fired them wildly at the target.
Don't worry. Soon it'll be Hollister's head, and I swear, I won't miss.
You're crazy, man. You really are.
Part 1. Escalation. Chapter 1. The way the wind was blowing, the footsteps of the nine boys could not be heard against the street, nor were their occasional whisperings any more audible to the neighborhood residents shut in their homes for the night. The cool autumn air seemed to swallow the glow of the intermittent streetlights, with a half moon barely detectable behind a blanket of stratus clouds. But the boys seemed at ease with the night rather than in fear of it. Stealthily, they moved along the curbside of the quiet road, blending with the shrubbery when a car drove by, then once again slinking down the roadside when the comfort of darkness returned. Eight of the boys followed the ninth in front, each clad in a midnight blue leather jacket with a white swirl on the back. Occasionally, one of the boys would move forward to converse with a leader before dropping back into the pack, but the leader generally walked alone, ready to utter a command if needed, his brown eyes keenly searching for the unexpected. At the moment, he confronted nothing but the cool wind tousling his wavy brown hair and ballooning the trunk of his open jacket into the face of a skinny boy strolling directly behind him. The leader slowed his gait as they approached a row of dark houses. "Which one is it?" he asked. The skinny boy stepped up beside the leader, his dark hair blowing all about in the wind.
"I don't know. The blue one? Mick knows."
He turned his head and called out,
"Hey, Mick."
"I'm right behind you, Crazy Legs. Try not to wake the neighborhood."
Mick brushed a strand of hair from his face, his eyes scanning the dark street. He tapped his leader on the arm before pointing across the street.
"It's the white one, Jeff.
But we gotta be careful. There's a dog next door."
"Are you sure nobody's home?"
Crazy Legs asked. Mick glared at him.
"Actually, there's 100 people inside. It's a surprise party just for you."
"Relax," Jeff said. "He's just asking." Mick scoffed.
"Well, if he wants something to worry over, he ought to worry about his piece of junk starting when it's time to go."
"It'll start,"
Crazy Legs insisted. Mick laughed.
"Is that a promise or an uneducated guess?"
"Enough," Jeff said. He turned to face the rest of the group. "Everyone knows what they're doing? Axel? Bumbles?" He glanced at the expressions of the two boys he had just called out, then at the faces of the others gathered before him. Once he was certain of their confidence, he clapped his hands and the gang dispersed, their discipline exemplified by their precise execution of a previously instructed plan. Only Jeff and Mick remained by the hedgerow at the edge of the property, along with Jeff's bodyguard, Train, a cheery stack of muscles with a boyish face. "What are you doing here?" Jeff asked him. "You're supposed to help load the cars."
"Axel wanted to switch. He said he didn't feel much like crawling around in the dark tonight. I think this is the best part."
"I don't care what you guys feel like doing. I need someone strong to help load the cars."
"Too late now,"
Mick said, cutting in.
"We ought to get started, don't you think?"
Jeff placed a hand on Train's shoulder. "Did Axel tell you what you're supposed to do?" Train nodded.
"I'm supposed to break down the door."
Mick slapped himself on the forehead.
"Not break down, break in. You're supposed to find a way in through the back."
"And if there is, you come to the front and let us in. Are you sure you know what you're doing?"
"Yep. Positive."
Train bolted off toward the backyard of the White House. Mick shook his head.
"Amazing."
Jeff smiled. "At least he won't try anything crazy that might get us caught." They left the bushes for the front door of the dark house.
"Keep talking about getting caught and it's gonna happen,"
Mick said.
"You're nervous or something?"
Jeff shrugged. "A little, I guess."
"Better keep it to yourself. If word gets out that the fearless Jeff Hollister is scared of a simple operation like this, you'll have a mutiny on your hands."
"I ain't scared. I'm just worried about things going sour. Too many moving parts."
"Like what? The gang? If you're not sure about them, there's still time."
"I'm not worried about the gang," Jeff answered quickly. He stopped at the base of the front steps. "Why? Are you?"
"Me? Hell no. Not in a fight anyway. But I'll admit all this sneaking around stuff seems a little out of their element."
Jeff climbed the steps and turned about to face his friend. "You'd rather fight than do this?"
"Well, yeah. Wouldn't you?"
"Ha. That's a rush. You sell me on these break-ins, and now you're getting cold feet?" Jeff found the screen door open, but the front doorknob was locked. "Besides, nobody's worth the trouble." Mick shrugged.
"The Tornadoes are."
"Craig's gang? I'm not sure they're even together anymore."
"Oh, they're together all right. I'm telling you, Jeff, they're up to something. We really humiliated them last time. We better squash them before they spell trouble."
Jeff unfolded an ivory-handled hunting knife and bent over to inspect the latch. "We're not going to start cracking skulls just because we're bored," he said without looking up. "We have a truce, and my word is my word. Now go check the garage door like you're supposed to." Mick grunted and descended the steps to the driveway, while Jeff pried at the molding with the blade of his knife, simultaneously rattling the knob in an attempt to jimmy it open. The door refused to budge, so he pulled the knife free and stowed it away, knowing he had already spent too much time on the steps. Strangely, the door popped open when he released the knob. He slowly pushed it open with his foot and peered inside to discover Train standing in the foyer.
"The back door was unlocked,"
he said smugly before turning about and heading back inside.
"Hey, Mick, we're in,"
Jeff whispered. He stepped into the dimly lit foyer that opened into a spacious living area with a darker hallway jutting off to the right, while a staircase to the left of the foyer led downstairs into blackness. Mick quietly slipped inside the foyer and eased the door nearly shut, peeking through a sliver of an opening at the empty street outside before latching it closed. Jeff gathered his friends together and pointed to the great room. "Train, you start here. Mick, head downstairs. I'll be down this hallway. No lights. Use your flashlights. Got your gloves on?" Train nodded, and Mick displayed his hands for everyone to see.
"Okay, go."
They nodded and split up in different directions as Jeff had instructed. Train scored the first item of value, disconnecting a flat-screen television from the wall and carrying it through a sliding glass door to an elevated back porch. From there, the Hurricanes carried it down the porch steps and across a long, sloping yard to a low post fence at the rear of the property. Another runner carried it across a flat ragweed field to an open lot off a nearby road where three vehicles awaited, a brown van, a blue Camaro, and a white Monte Carlo sedan, all with engines idling. The Hurricanes loaded the television into the back of the van, followed by other valuable merchandise, including a desktop computer, a stereo with its speakers, and even a pair of skis. Soon, a frantic report made its way back up the chain to Mick, and he searched desperately throughout the dark rooms of the house until he found his leader rummaging through a dresser in the master bedroom.
Jeff!
He said breathlessly.
We got trouble.
Jeff stuffed a watch into his pocket. What's the matter?
Bumbles dropped the microwave oven while he was loading the van. I guess it smashed pretty good. Danny said he saw a light go on in the house next door.
How long ago?
A few minutes.
Mick glanced about.
Still some good stuff here. Your call.
Jeff slid a dresser drawer shut before rushing past Mick out of the bedroom. We're done. Where's Train? Mick followed him down the hallway.
He's on the back porch.
Good. Let's get out of here. Jeff bolted to the end of the hallway with Mick hot on his heels. They stopped at the rear glass door and Jeff slid it open. But Mick grabbed his arm and held him still.
Shh. Hear it? Sirens.
Cops? They couldn't respond so fast.
Maybe someone tipped them off. What do you want to do?
Jeff stepped out onto the elevated porch. Where's Train? Mick followed him out and looked around.
Maybe he went back inside.
Jeff stepped up to the railing and peered across the backyard. I don't see any of them. You don't think? Suddenly, the roar of engines filled the air, followed by the screech of tires on pavement.
They're ditching us! Come on!
Jeff climbed over the railing and jumped from the porch, falling to his hands and knees upon landing. He scrambled to his feet as Mick landed beside him, and together they raced across the dark backyard, hurdling the low post fence in stride. Running through the dusty ragweed field, they saw that only the Monte Carlo remained, rolling slowly toward the road with its headlights off.
Come on, we can still make it!
Jeff cried out, dashing ahead of his friend as the sirens grew louder. The coupe reached the road and began to pull away, its tires squealing and spinning dirt into the air. Jeff sprinted through the dust cloud and dove for the car, smacking a clenched fist against the trunk lid before tumbling to the pavement. Red brake lights flashed in his face as the car skidded to a halt on the shoulder of the road. Crazy Legs jumped out of the car and helped Jeff to his feet.
Are you okay?
Jeff brushed the gravel from his jeans before shoving his friend back against the car. Where the hell were you going?
Brain said the cops were coming,
Crazy Legs explained quickly.
You said if there was any trouble to just get the stuff out of here, so we did.
Jeff released him. Use your head. Do you think we were just gonna sit there while the cops came in? Mick ran up and hopped into the back seat of the car.
Hey, let's get out of here.
Jeff ducked inside and clambered over the center console to take the front passenger seat as Crazy Legs slid behind the steering wheel and shut the door. Seconds later, they were driving away, quickly gaining distance from the scene of the crime. Jeff glanced about. Where's all the stuff?
In Train's van,
Crazy Legs replied.
This car's clean.
Mick kicked aside an empty French fry box.
As clean as it ever is.
What happened to that microwave? Jeff asked.
We picked up the pieces,
Crazy Leg said.
Train's gonna ditch it when he gets home.
The car jerked erratically as the engine sputtered and coughed. A bright red light flashed on the instrument panel, and all three boys groaned in dismay. I thought you said you filled this thing up, Jeff yelled.
I did,
Crazy Leg said.
I swear I did.
Mick folded his arms and sulked.
He filled it up last month. What more could you ask for?
Look, there's plenty of gas.
Crazy Legs pointed to a bright red light on the dash. He shifted into neutral and tried to start the engine again, but the car rolled silently to a stop.
Something's wrong, that's for sure.
Smells like you fried it,
Mick said.
Maybe it's out of oil.
Great, Jeff muttered. Way to go. Crazy Legs turned the key again to no avail.
Maybe a belt broke or something.
Mick leaned forward.
Maybe someone sabotaged it. Someone like Craig Matthews.
How could he?
Crazy Legs asked.
How could anyone? I mean, Bumbles and Axel were standing right next to it. If it's sabotage, we've got some pretty dumb friends.
No comment,
Mick muttered. Well, we can't fix it now. Might as well start walking. Crazy Legs sighed and pulled the key from the ignition switch.
Maybe we can hitch a ride.
They all climbed out of the car and locked it before continuing down the road on foot. 30 minutes later, they had yet to be passed by a single car, and the overcast sky began to spit raindrops on them. Jeff and Mick continued to trudge together along the long dark road leading back to their neighborhood, but Crazy Legs lagged behind. Finally, the skinny boy yelped and sat down on the curb before kicking off his running shoe in disgust. Mick kept walking, but Jeff turned back. What's the matter now? Crazy Legs banged his shoe with the palm of his hand.
I've had this stupid rock in my shoe for the past half mile, and I'm sick of it.
Hurry up, will ya?
Mick moaned.
I want to get home before the sun comes up.
Crazy Legs slipped the shoe back on and started to tie his laces.
Damn it! My shoelace broke!
Mick grimaced.
Come on, Jeff. You can catch up.
Hurry up, Crazy Legs. Jeff jogged up to Mick and they continued walking. You'd think with all the running he does, he could stand one little pebble. Mick nodded.
Maybe we should start calling him Tenderfoot instead.
Mick glanced back to their friend before leaning closer to Jeff.
So what you think?
He asked in a hushed tone. What do I think about what?
You think the tornado sabotaged his car?
No, I think maybe a belt broke, like he said.
Sure. All of a sudden it just breaks, right?
Maybe. Remember how it happened to Train on the way to the beach last year?
Kinda coincidental, though, don't you think? In the middle of an operation with the cops 2 blocks away?
Man, you're just dying to have it out with them again, aren't you? Jeff shook his head and laughed. Let's not start busting heads just because Crazy Legs' piece of shit breaks down.
Why not? If they deserved it?
I'm not seeing it. We have a truce. They seem happy with it.
Really? You think they're happy with 2 nights a week at a pool hall?
Maybe. I'll work it out with Craig if they're not.
It's more than that, Jeff. Maybe they haven't started in on you, but they sure as hell have been harassing us.
Harassing? Really? Like who?
Like me.
Jeff laughed. You cry harassment when your old man tells you to cut the grass.
Okay, then. TJ. And Axel. And who do you think smashed all the garage windows at Denny's house last month?
It could have been anyone.
Come on, Jeff, you know better.
Jeff shook his head. You're still jumping to conclusions. When they come out in the open, I'll reconsider. Until then, my word stands. That means you don't start trouble. Mick frowned and looked back for Crazy Legs.
Hey, look, a car's coming.
Jeff turned his head to see. Still want to hitch? We might as well. Mick stopped and gazed into the darkness.
Wait a minute, is that a...
Cop, hide! They dove to their right into a dense row of bushes and peered out as the police cruiser stopped beside Crazy Legs. Doors opened, words were exchanged, and doors slammed shut again. The cruiser roared past them a moment later, with its colored lights flashing but its siren silent, as it disappeared over a hill farther down the deserted street. Mick pulled a thorn from his palm as they emerged from their cover.
You would have to pick a pricker bush to jump into.
Jeff gazed down the empty road and scratched his chin. They couldn't have arrested him for anything, could they? He didn't even go inside the house. Mick shrugged.
Maybe they just given him a ride home.
Jeff started walking again. Maybe, but I don't like it. They probably found his car, too. Plus, he's got his hurricane jacket on.
Why should that matter?
Come on, Mick. Ever since that jackass Wellis became the police chief, the cops ain't been nothing but trouble. They know exactly who we are, every single one of us. Hell, they might be knocking on your front door right now. Mick fell silent for a moment.
You don't think they just bring him home?
A kid in a hurricane's jacket? If you were a cop, would you?
So what should we do?
Get home, Fast. Mick glanced nervously at Jeff, already quickening his pace, and he responded by breaking into a jog. Soon, they were running as fast as their stamina allowed, the urgency of their situation driving them onward. When they arrived at their neighborhood a short time later, the predicated police dragnet had yet to materialize, so the Landry residence stood as dark and quiet as the other homes lining both sides of Birch Road. Jeff sighed with relief as they ascended the sloping driveway of Mick's house, noting the smugness on his friend's face as they rounded the corner into the backyard of the property. Only when they stopped outside the back door with the sound of crickets in their ears did Mick deliver the anticipated sarcastic quip.
"Good thing we ran so fast,"
he said as he slid the key into the doorknob lock.
"We almost missed all the action around here."
Jeff cocked an ear toward the door. "Your phone's ringing."
"What?"
Mick threw the door open and dashed across the dim room to snatch the receiver off its hook amid the second ring.
"Crazy Lick, are you some kind of moron? My parents are sleeping."
Jeff shut the door and stepped to a pool table in the center of the room. "Where is he?" Mick motioned for silence.
"Uh-huh. Yeah, he's right here. Hold on."
He covered the speaker of the phone with his palm and held it out to Jeff.
"Watch what you say. I think he's being recorded."
Jeff took the phone and held it to his ear. "Crazy Legs, what's up?"
"I'm at the police station."
"Really? How come?"
"They were grilling me about some house being broken into. They asked me all sorts of questions about you."
"Uh-huh. What'd you say?"
Nothing much. I told them how you and Mick went to the movies tonight."
"Cool. So, what do you want?"
"I need a ride home."
Jeff bristled. "They brought you there. Have them bring you home."
"The cop who brought me here left on another call. They said it might be an hour before they can give me a ride."
"So call your mother."
"I can't call my mother, Jeff. It's after midnight. She'll throw a fit if I call her from the police station. You know how she gets. Come on, man. I need a ride."
Jeff sighed. "I don't even have my car right now. I let Axel borrow it. He had that date, remember?" Mick rolled his eyes at Jeff's yarn as he bounced a cue ball off the cushioned pool table railing.
"Tell him to run home like we did. It's only a mile or two. He's missed a marathon."
Jeff frowned and turned away. "Okay, Crazy Legs. If Axel's back with my car, I'll be down there in 10 minutes. If I'm not there by 1 o'clock, start walking. Do not call my house. Understand? And you better be waiting outside."
"Got it, Jeff. See you in a few. Thanks."
Jeff hung up the phone and shook his head. "I must be some kind of idiot."
"You're kidding. You're actually going down there to pick him up?"
"No, we are." Mick shook his head.
"Not me. Forget it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not gonna go. I won't do it."
10 minutes later, Jeff slowed his midnight blue Camaro down Willow Street to a blinking red light hanging over a quiet intersection. Mick glowered in the passenger seat, his arms folded across his chest and his face turned toward glowing plaza lights a quarter mile to their right.
"This night keeps getting worse. We just robbed the house and now we're walking into the lion's den."
Jeff turned the car left onto Borough Street, a main thoroughfare in the town of Salisbury. "Relax. We're not even getting out of the car," he said. "You can hide in the trunk if it makes you feel better." Mick slouched back in his seat and closed his eyes.
"Someone's gonna pay for this."
Jeff punched the gas and swerved the car wildly across the center line. He grinned as Mick opened his eyes and braced his hands against the dashboard. "Don't be napping on me. This whole housebreaking thing was your idea in the first place." Mick straightened up in his seat.
"Okay, okay. At least we got some money now."
"Well, we better cool it for a while. Fence off the new stuff straight up. I just want to get rid of it."
"Whatever. You're the boss."
A mile down the road, Jeff turned the car onto a long, winding driveway leading up a gentle incline toward a brick building in the distance. As they crossed the hilltop, the driveway opened to their left into the parking lot of the Salisbury Public Safety Complex. the building stood brightly lit by spotlights in the grass. A smattering of cars parked in the front spaces of the lot, and a line of idle police cruisers sitting near the edge of the grass at the far edge of the asphalt. Jeff steered the Camaro to the right and backed the car into a space before killing the headlights. Mick lowered his window halfway to scan the brick building.
I thought you told him to wait outside.
I did. I have no idea what his problem is. Go in and get him.
Me? No way. I don't even want to be here, remember? You go. I'll stay here.
Jeff pulled his keys from the ignition switch and opened his door. I'll be right out.
Leave me the keys so I can play the radio?
Jeff scowled at him before tossing the keys in his lap. Keep it down. Don't attract any attention. And no smoking in my car.
Yeah, whatever.
A fine mist fell upon Jeff's face as he stepped outside the car. He zipped his jacket and strode headlong into a stiff breeze as he located the access sidewalk and followed it to the building's entrance. After passing through double glass doors, he turned left down a long, dim hallway and stopped at the first door on the left, drawing a deep breath to summon his bravado as he pushed the door open to enter the lobby of the Salisbury Police Department. A young female dispatcher watched him approach from behind a glass barrier.
Can I help you?
Jeff leaned in toward a speaker embedded in the glass. I'm looking for Gary Kramer, he said aloofly. Is he here? She pressed a button on her console and adjusted the headset microphone.
Chief, someone's here for the Kramer kid?
She listened to a response and gestured toward a row of chairs lining a wall.
Have a seat, please.
Instead, Jeff meandered toward a plaque on the wall, superficially reading its wording as he watched from the corner of his eye, a tall man with a thick black mustache enter from a hallway at the rear end of the dispatch room. The man polished the lenses of his reading glasses as he stepped up to the speaker behind the glass.
Well, well, if it isn't Jeff Hollister, fearless leader of the Hurricanes.
Jeff winced at the sight of the police chief. I'm looking for Gary Kramer.
The kid in the snazzy blue jacket just like yours?
The chief slid his glasses into his shirt pocket and leaned over the countertop close to the glass.
He's back in the interrogation room. He's singing like a canary.
Jeff forced a smile. Funny. I always thought he sounded more like a parakeet. Seriously, where is he? The chief's stare did not waver.
I just told you. Interrogation room.
Jeff stretched to peer over the man's shoulder. Where's that? Across the hall from the torture chamber?
Don't get smart, Hollister. I know where you were tonight.
You were at the movies too? You should have said hi. I would have shared my popcorn. The chief's eyes narrowed and he pointed his pen at Jeff's chest.
You weren't at any movie. And you weren't at church bingo either. We know all about your little burglary ring.
Jeff's pulse quickened. He knew his alibi was weak, so he decided to force the chief's hand quickly. Well, I'm right here. He held his wrists out. Go ahead and arrest me. Chief Wellis diverted his eyes.
We're still collecting evidence.
Jeff laughed. Good idea. You don't have any right now.
We know more than you think. Your days are numbered, Hollister. I'm gonna lock you up or run you out of town. That's a promise.
Jeff's temper simmered. He started to reply, but a tap on his shoulder cut him off. He whirled about, expecting an officer to grab him, only to see Crazy Legs with a startled look on his face. Where were you? Crazy Legs pulled back.
The bathroom. Why?
Jeff turned about and stepped up to the counter. He leaned forward until his nose was inches from the chief's face on the other side of the thick glass. You'll have to try harder than that. The chief's nostrils flared.
I'll see you soon, Hollister.
The Hurricane leader stormed out of the lobby into the hallway, but Crazy Legs ran after him.
Jeff, what's going on?
Jeff paced with fists clenched. That bastard said you were in the back, spilling your guts.
I'd rather die. He was bluffing, Jeff. They're grasping at straws.
Jeff's face reddened. Some stupid transfer cop thinks he's gonna run me out of town? I'll show him. I've lived my whole life in this nowhere town.
Easy, man. They were squeezing me too. They got nothing.
Jeff coughed and pulled at the collar of his t-shirt. His voice cracked as he spoke. I need a drink.
My father's got some beer at the house.
Jeff shook his head. I need water. Crazy Legs pointed to the far end of the dark hallway.
Around the corner, to the right.
Mix in the car. I'll be right out. Jeff rushed down the hallway in search of cool water to soothe his parched throat. He ducked blindly around the corner and promptly collided with someone walking in the opposite direction. Staggering backward, he reached out to steady the girl he had nearly bowled over. Sorry, he said. I didn't see you. She held a hand to her head.
It's my fault. I wasn't expecting anyone coming this way.
She watched him as he continued down the dim hallway.
What are you looking for? Everything's closed up down there.
He cleared his throat. Water. She pointed to a water fountain and continued down the other hallway. Jeff stepped to the fountain to gulp down a few mouthfuls of water, wondering why a pretty girl was roaming the dark halls of the Salisbury Public Safety Complex so late at night. Wiping his chin, he hurried back toward the long hallway to catch a glimpse of her before she exited the building. Instead, they collided again just around the corner. She stumbled back and eyed him suspiciously.
You're dangerous.
He leaned back against the wall. That's what you get for lurking in the dark.
I'm not lurking. I'm waiting for someone.
She started walking away. He glanced about the hallway. Who? The janitor? She laughed.
No, I'm waiting for my father.
He grinned. I'm not going to ask why your father's at the police station at this time of night. She backed away and smiled playfully at him.
Good. I wasn't going to tell you anyway.
Well, what can you tell me? How about your name?
I don't remember,
she said coyly. He halted, sensing rejection. Well, if you think of it, let me know. She stopped and leaned back against the corridor wall.
It's Cindy.
He walked slowly toward her. Are you from Salisbury? I don't recognize you. He found her deep brown eyes mesmerizing in the dim lighting.
Well, you should. I'm in your history class.
He smiled. Well, that explains it. I'm usually asleep by then.
We just moved here in the summer. I still haven't made many friends yet.
Jeff straightened up. Hey, I got an idea. My friend Train is having a party at his house tomorrow. It's a big white house on Maple Street. Come by and I'll introduce you around. She smiled.
Your friend's name is Train? Does he like the choo-choos?
Jeff laughed. No, that's just his nickname. It's a long story.
I'd love to hear it.
She continued down the hallway and stopped at an unmarked door to her right.
Maybe I'll see you tomorrow then?
My name's Jeff, he blurted out.
Oh, I know who you are.
She opened the door and slipped inside before shutting it behind her. Jeff walked slowly toward the exit of the building, perplexed by her parting comment, but chalking it up to his notoriety at Salisbury High. Outside the building, he jogged through the light mist to the Camaro parked in the shadows, opening the door and hopping into the driver's seat. Mick eyed him warily.
What are you so happy about?
Jeff started the engine and switched on the headlights. I just met the most awesome girl, he replied as he began to drive away. Crazy Legs leaned forward between the seats.
Girl? What girl? I didn't see any girl.
Jeff smirked. That's because you're too busy staring at your fancy running shoes all the time. She was right there in the hallway. Her name's Cindy. She's coming to Train's party tomorrow. Mick snickered.
Jeff, the only girls at the police station this time of night are hookers or drug addicts.
Or a combination of the two.
Crazy Legs chimed in. Mick laughed.
Didn't your mama ever tell you that?
Jeff waved them off. This girl's different. I saw it in her eyes. You guys are idiots.
You saw it in her eyes.
Was it love?
Jeff smacked him in the chest. Shut up.
Where to now?
Crazy Legs asked. Home. I've had it with you guys for one night. Jeff punched the gas to thrust his friends back in their seats, rankled by the frustrating evening, but eager to see what the next day might bring.